The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Here First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I've spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Here First wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For the past 3 years, the Iowa Writers' House in Iowa City has hosted the Bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship, giving immigrant and first-generation Iowans an opportunity to write, express themselves, and share their stories. The culmination of the most recent fellowship is We the Interwoven, Volume 3. It features the work of seven Iowa writers with very different backgrounds and stories. This hour, I'll talk with three of the contributors to the collection. Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City is hosting a virtual reading for all of the contributors on Sunday, January 17th at 2 p.m. And with me now is Andrea Wilson, the founder of the Iowa Writers House and the editor, one of the editors of the collection. Andrea, hello.
Hello, Charity. Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that this has been a very difficult and different year for you, and I want to talk about that. But first, for people who aren't familiar with this Bicultural Writers Fellowship, take us back in time. You founded the Iowa Writers House back in 2015. What was the inspiration for this fellowship?
Charity, thank you so much for bringing us on, for letting us be here this morning. I'm so excited to talk about this book, this project. It has been a difficult year, but I think our inspiration has always been about trying to raise the voices of those who we believe are really needed to be heard in society. And back in 2015, when I founded the Writers' House, I believed more than ever in the power of story and the fact that we're all on a journey to understand ourselves and to author our own sort of individual stories. And yet at the same time, there's 300 million of us living here in America that are interweaving with each other and whose stories all intertwine. And so what I saw at that moment, I think, was that there was really an opportunity for more voices to be brought into the collective understanding of the story of our country, yes, but especially of Iowa. We are a state known for education and a state celebrated nationally and internationally for writing. And yet most of the literature that was coming out of Iowa and was being published was primarily narratives about our history in agriculture, our history in sort of European migration, and this sort of next generation of immigration and the ways that that is intertwining with our food sources and with the economy was not really being published at a level that it needed to be. And on top of that, it seemed like most of the narratives being written about Iowa were kind of from what I would call parachute journalists. So people that were coming in to report on the caucuses or really be part of the presidential election process.
Right. We get rediscovered just about every 4 years and somebody explains us to the rest of the nation.
You got it. You got it. So this was really an opportunity and an attempt to put on a platform and to give the microphone to people who had stories that we feel need to be not only heard but considered as we really look at the future of the United States of America and what role Iowa plays in that. These voices, these newest Americans, really have a lot to teach us, and there is nothing greater for perspective than an external viewpoint. For people who've lived somewhere else and come here, for people who are trying on the American dream for the first time, listening is an opportunity I think that all of us can really gain from. And we're on the radio, so no one knows better than you about listening.
When you bring these bicultural writers together, and again, not so much physically this year, tell me about the experience, because some of the people that you bring into the program have experience writing. Some of the people that you've brought into the program are first-generation Americans. Some have moved here from somewhere else in the world. I mean, there's this incredible variety and diversity among the bicultural writers that you bring together. How do you and how do they help each other start to express themselves and feel that their stories are valued?
It's really one of the most sort of fascinating things to witness. I mean, it's really an honor for me to direct this program and to see that integration and collaboration come together. And you're absolutely right. The writers, you know, the people that are awarded the opportunity to be bicultural fellows, they apply, so they self-select. We put out an all call. We have the last 3 years, so we did in 2017, 18, and 19. And the responses we get are from people who have a myriad of experiences, and some of them have written and others have never. One of the writers that you'll hear from today is a teacher of mathematics. So this was a really new experience for him, but all of them know somewhere deep in their hearts that they have experienced that when we ask for stories of biculturalism, stories of migration, of finding new identity of home, they know that there's something inside of them that's worthy of being shared. And for many of them, I think there's a feeling of seeking and searching, not only for a contextual understanding of their own experience, but for if there might be others out there who share something. And so when they come together, and we actually did get in all three residencies this year before the coronavirus shut things down. So that was a real blessing. So each of them got to meet each other, and Salma, Iyad, they all just connected in a way that was, I think, this year more than ever, about just a gleefulness of realizing that they're not alone in these processes, in this experience. And the way that they collaborate is really a lot of aha moments. In the first residency, there are three of them. In the first, much more timidness, and I think unsure of if what they're sharing will resonate with others. And by the third, it is literally a brother and sisterhood, and they have all realized that each of their experiences is unique and valuable, and there's a lot of intertwining, which is exactly why the title We the Interwoven works so well for the series.
During this year, you've had a lot of changes at the Iowa Writers House, including the fact that the Iowa Writers House is no longer a physical place. You lost your physical home.
It has been a year of difficulty and of facing an unknown future, I think, for so, so many of us. And we are really hopeful that the ethos of the Writers House and the mission and what we do can carry on. But we are looking forward into a space that we don't know when we'll be able to gather physically again, and that the costs of maintaining, an old house and just a space was not going to work in the middle of a pandemic. And so I'm so optimistic that what we do is now more needed than ever, but definitely feeling the challenge of how to pivot and how to continue bringing new opportunities to connect with our community here in Iowa City and all across Iowa, because we are voices as a collective that continue to need to be heard and to share with each other.
And in the midst of all this, you are working on new projects as well. You're developing a high school curriculum. Tell me about that.
Well, we know that these first three volumes of We the Interwoven, they are treasures, and they hold so much within them to be discovered. And while I am a big fan of the classics, and my mother was a high school English teacher in Columbus Junction, Iowa, so, you know, I grew up on Gatsby and The Catcher in the Rye and on Shakespeare, and I believe that those are incredibly important for our students to study. And yet, we are in a new time, and there are new layers and dimensions of what we can learn from literature. And so we've been working with the Iowa City School District to discuss the opportunity of bringing in curriculum around book one or book two for part of their biliteracy program. And it's just in the beginning discussions, but I believe that these books really hold opportunity for Iowa educators, for Iowa communities, for Iowa libraries, and that they can be a basis for having really difficult and complex conversations. And so creating this curriculum and doing it in such a way that it adheres to all the, you know, common core and necessary curriculum codes is really making sure that people who bring this in can feel confident that they have a good foundation for discussing things that I think right now in the political sphere are sort of being considered from angles that really make it difficult for teachers to talk about these things.
You also, are you continuing with the bicultural fellowship? Are you starting the 2021 class?
So this year we're going to take a pause, and that's probably not surprising. And I know that much of that is due to COVID, but I'll tell you, Charity, I just really believe that the three books that we've published, they still have singing to do. And I think a lot of people are still discovering this collection. And certainly with the work we're doing on the curriculum now, I think maybe we're just beginning to understand where these can be used. And so instead of focusing on generating yet another book right now, I think the best thing that we can do is to be available for collaborations, for presentations, for, you know, dialing into schools and giving talks on these books and really helping use the material that we've created that we're so proud of.
For people who pick up We the Interwoven Volume 3, what do you want people to take away from the experience of reading about these seven different Iowans?
I would say what I most wish for is curiosity, to come to these stories with an open mind, and to know that as much as it really behooves our psychological security to believe that we have all the answers and that we understand, you know, how it works, that truly there's so much to be gained when we can enter a conversation with ourselves or with others with curiosity and an open mind and the sort of wonder of what could be. And so each of these stories and these voices has something to teach us. And in truth, we're human beings meant to learn, meant to grow. And so there is fear out there of the unknown, but this is an incredible opportunity, I think, really for a renaissance and for an evolution of humanity. And I think all voices deserve to come to the table, you know, e pluribus unum, in many one. This is the foundation of the United States of America. And I believe that together we can evolve into something even greater.
Andrea, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Charity.
Andrea Wilson is the founder of the Iowa Writers House, and she's one of the editors of the collection We the Interwoven, Volume 3. It's an anthology of bicultural Iowa. In just a moment, we will begin meeting some of the contributors to this new collection. And if you'd like to hear from them, you can join Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City for a virtual reading on Sunday, January 17th. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're meeting some of the Iowans whose writing is featured in the collection We the Interwoven, Volume 3. It's the culmination of the third Bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship hosted by the Iowa Writers House. A little later on, I'll talk with Iyad Said about watching from afar as the people in his home country, Syria, suffer through an ongoing civil war, and Shalini Justy about finding her identity as an Indian American. My My next guest is Salma Salama. She grew up in Sudan and became a successful journalist and radio host. She had to leave her home country for her own safety, threatened by the military dictatorship that had taken over. She eventually found her way to the United States and safety, but she also lost much along the way, the closeness of family and her career. She had to reinvent herself here, and she is on the phone with me now. Hello.
Hello, morning.
Thank you for talking with me today. And
thank you for having me.
Tell me, what brought you to Iowa, of all places? I know that when you came to the United States, you started out in Houston, Texas. What brought you to Iowa?
Actually, my friend asked me to come over, and that happened in 1999. And we just moved, me and my daughter, from Houston, Texas to Iowa. Iowa City. So since then, I'm here.
Your friend suggested that you move to Iowa because she felt that you would experience less racism here. She also invited you to come because there is a strong Sudanese community in Iowa City. Did you find Iowa when you came in 1999 to be more welcoming?
Yes, it was. And still.
Good. You write a lot in your part of the book about the warmth and compassion of the culture in Sudan, how people would share food with those who need it. And there are systems set up to make that happen. That's not as much a part of our culture in the United States. Have you found ways to live that part of your culture here?
Yes, I am. By the way, I find out there is a lot of common between United States and Sudan in this particular part about the food. So I think it is humanity in everywhere. So in Iowa nowadays, I'm living with a senior at the senior apartment. So every day when I get downstairs, there is a food on the counter, no matter what, who brought it. But we share it. Sometimes I brought my food downstairs to share it with my community in this building, and they are sharing. Sometimes they knock my door, "Hey, Salma, this food from whoever." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, thank you. I will brought some for you when I'm cooking." So that's what happened here. I find out in Egypt, even though I was living with a lady, and I have in one bedroom in her house, and she used to cook, and we share all the time. We share food. "Oh, that's from Sudan, yeah. That's from Egypt. Oh, they are similar. We are talking about food." So in Greece, I find that that attitude between the community. So I think it is part of the nature in the whole world to share food, to know a lot about each other.
In coming to the United States, in leaving your country, you had to give up so much, and we don't have time to talk about so many of the things that you gave up. But I think it's interesting to think about how you were a famous radio broadcaster in Sudan. You were an accomplished professional. And coming to the United States, that wasn't something you could bring with you because of the language barrier.
Yes. Right.
What was that like for you to have to start from scratch, to do jobs that you never dreamed you'd have to do just to make a living?
Yeah, but you know what? I love it. I love my every job I was doing. I love it, and I wrote about it. For example, I wrote about my duty at the hospital and how I was amazed with the people whom are visiting their patient, and they brought food, and they talk, and they chat, and they ask me to help them to feed their patient. Well, that's not my job, but I was doing it. I was glad to do it. And In the other hand, when I work with the kids at the daycare, I was very, very amazed with how the attitude is the same, how the kids are looking alike everywhere. On the other hand, when I work with disabled people or special needs, let's say special needs, I find out there is an amazing world between them. I never imagined I'm going to be part of this community of special needs. They are very high humanity. They are very high special attitude towards me. Not because I'm black or white, no. Because I'm treating them the way they need it. And I love that about them. And they love me as I am. So that's why I'm working with them now for almost 9 years. I love to work with them. While I having that subject to write about it. Now I have like 3 books about different kind of work I attend here in the United States.
I want to ask you before we run out of time, you've written a great deal in Arabic and published a great deal in Arabic, but
Right. You
haven't really had that opportunity in the United States. What does it mean to you to be part of this writer's fellowship and to have the opportunity to share your story in a book?
It means a lot, by the way. It means a lot. It means a new reader. It means a new experience. It means a lot to me. For the first time, I published in a different magazine here in Iowa City and Iowa Writers, and now I have in this fellowship. But to be honest, I love it, so they can know about my country, about me, about what I'm writing.
Salma, thank you so much for talking with me today, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Salma Salama lives in Iowa City. She's originally from Sudan and is one of the contributors to We the Interwoven, Volume 3. My next guest is Iyad Said, assistant professor at Mount Mercy University in the Department of Natural and Applied Sciences. He is originally from Syria and came to the United States to get his PhD in mathematics. But he also came because his home country was becoming more and more dangerous, and he's been unable to return to Syria since arriving in the United States in 2012, then with his wife and small daughter. Iyad, hello. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And let's go back in time a little bit. You came to the United States to study mathematics, but when you left Syria, did you already feel like you probably would not be able to return again?
Yeah. I think if I'm to describe it, there was this looming sense that maybe none of our family members, either from my side or my wife's side, talked about, but we could sense that things were getting much, much worse by the minute. And yeah, there was the fear that we didn't admit to ourselves that it might be years and years before we could meet our families again.
You write in the collection about your experiences as a student in Louisiana and how being from Syria was really difficult because the people who surrounded you weren't following what was happening in Syria and didn't seem to care that there was this major humanitarian crisis in your country. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that is true. I came to Louisiana with this huge emotional package. We, like as any other Syrian would tell you, living in the States, would be stuck maybe to Facebook and other social media or other news outlets for hours every day, trying just to fathom what is going on, trying to understand these atrocities. And I think with time, you kind of assume that everybody's doing the same. And I would sometimes unintentionally just steer any random conversation with colleagues in the math department to the Syrian situation. Like, let's go to lunch. Well, people in Syria might be not able to have lunch right now. And that was not fun for people around me.
Well, and you and your wife and your daughter, and then your son joined you as well when you lived in Louisiana. You were in a position where neither you or your wife could work, although you were a teaching assistant at the university. So you were really living in poverty. I mean, these were very difficult times.
That is true. Yeah. Very difficult times. We arrived to Louisiana with a couple of $100 on us. That was it. The scholarship that LSU handed to us, I'll be the mathematician here. Statistically speaking, most graduate students are single. They only have themselves to take care of. That was not the case for us. So for the 6 years that we spent while I was doing my PhD, they were like really, really difficult.
What brought you to Iowa?
A job offer from Mount Mercy. When I was close to being done with the PhD program, I, you know, started applying here and there. I kept lost count of how many applications I threw around. The Mount Mercy University offer was the one that I eventually picked up.
In the collection, you also write about what it's been like to be a relatively new immigrant to the United States during the last 5 years. You write about what it was like to hear now President Donald Trump's rhetoric when he was on the campaign trail talking about specifically calling out refugees from Syria and talking about how dangerous they were and how they weren't welcome in this country. Obviously not something that everyone felt, but still to hear that from someone who was so powerful and became even more powerful, what was that like for you and your wife and others that you knew from Syria?
So even before the presidential elections, the minute we stepped foot in the United States, somehow I decided I want to be the polite dinner guest. You know, the guy that comes into your house and only comments on the positive things, only, you know, says how lovely the dinner was, but pretend not to see anything else. When it was the presidential elections, and up to that time, I always kept my mouth shut. I decided I will not be, you know, sharing any negative thoughts. At that moment, when I was sitting in front of that TV listening to someone like you described, a powerful person describing me and my people as dangerous to the state or to the United States, and listening to the crowds cheer for that, I felt unwanted. Like, maybe this is it for me. This is the time that we should pack up and leave. If I am to continue being the polite dinner guest, then I should know when I'm not wanted and that I should just, you know, thank my host and go away. However, that was not an option at that time. And I felt really torn apart. Like, what do I do?
You did have one colleague who took a moment just to tell you that wasn't how he felt. What did that mean to you to have someone just pause and tell you that he did not agree?
It really meant the world to me. With all the thoughts that I internalized, all the emotions that I kept hidden away from everyone else, to have someone just randomly, and I mean by randomly, like at a random time, we just met in the math department. He was another grad student, reach out to me and say, "Hey, man, I'm sorry you had to listen to that. I totally do not agree with what's been said." It was at that time, at that moment, that I realized, you know what, these crowds cheering are not the, or they do not represent everyone around. There are people around me who care for me, who do not want to see me, not even stressed about what I've been listening to, and that I was not alone. It completely changed my view to that decision. Should I just pack up and leave?
You came to this country to study mathematics, and mm-hmm. now here you are writing about your experiences and publishing them in a collection. What connected you with this program and made you think it's time for me to write?
It's crazy, right? I still feel like I am the outsider in one way or another. So I was invited to a reading of the second volume, and I went there without many assumptions. I did not know exactly what the program was about, and I was listening to other storytellers who are either immigrants or have some connection to me, like family members who are immigrants. And to me, having decided that I want to be the polite guest who doesn't share stories, who just sit there quietly in the corner of the room, I looked at them and they were so brave. Like, how would you put yourself out there and share intimate details about your story for God knows how many readers, and with the purpose of, poking someone and say, "Hey, I have a story that I would like you to listen to," and inviting others to also tell their story.
And Iyad, we're going to have to pick that up just after a break. We will take a short break and be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Iyad Said. He is one of the contributors to the new collection, We the Interwoven, Volume 3, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with contributors to the new collection, We the Interwoven, Volume 3, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. 7 Iowa writers with very different backgrounds and stories participated in the Iowa Bicultural Writers Fellowship, and their work has been published in this collection. There will be a reading, a virtual reading, at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on Sunday, January 17th at 2 p.m., which you can join in virtually. With me right now is Iyad Said. He's an assistant professor at Mount Mercy University in the Department of Natural and Applied Sciences. He's a mathematician. He came to the United States back in 2012 to get his Ph.D. in mathematics. He came from Syria with his wife and his young daughter and just moved to Iowa a couple of years ago. And Iyad, just before the break, we were talking about how you, as a mathematician who had never written about your life at all, got involved in this program. And you were talking about how brave you saw the people who had participated in this work before, how brave they seemed to you. And you clearly decided that you could be that brave as well. What made you decide to apply?
Oh, well, it wasn't a clear decision to me, Charity. I had internally debated, should I do something similar? The main motive to me was I want the community around me, Iowans, to look at Syria from another perspective, not just the Syria that is in the news, not just that black hole somewhere in the Middle East that is swallowing all, breaking news and headlines, but more of a Syria of the Syrians, like regular people who come to the United States trying to follow their American dream, what that American dream looked like to them. It immediately defied my original intention of just being quiet. So eventually, Andrea was the one to encourage me. She told me, you have a story to tell and you don't tell it, then I mean, what's the point? Go ahead, try, and let's see what happens. So I give her the credit for that decision.
You not only had never done any writing before, but in your contribution, you write a lot about the very conservative household you were raised in. And not only did you not write, you did not talk about your feelings. You didn't tell other family members what they meant to you. That was just not how things worked in your household. Was that hard for you to dig deep and share really some very, very personal feelings and to be so vulnerable?
Crazy hard. I found that I struggled a lot with digging some of the memories. Some for obvious reasons, like I did not want to remember them, like some bad memories from after the revolution. But somewhere, I think they were like intimate, loving memories, and I still struggled to find them. It's because I was coming from that, as you put it, that conservative household. We didn't really share feelings. It wasn't just a thing. With the help of Andrea, Salma, Alicia, with the prompts that they helped me with, the support, I was able to get me.
We have just one moment left. I know that an important part of writing this was also to leave something for your children who have grown up in the United States, who don't have any memories of life in Syria at all. It's somewhere that is very far away. And of course, they talk to their grandparents, but they can't be with them physically. What does it mean to have this to give to your children when they're old enough to read it and understand it?
Yeah, I wanted to leave them with something more articulate than just a casual dinner time story about Syria, and to leave that for them as an option to read when they are ready for. Obviously, we can't tell our 7 years old and 9 years old about all the tragic things that are going on there. We just give them the very wide details. This is an important thing that I'm leaving my kids with.
Iyad Said, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Charity.
Iyad Said is an assistant professor at Mount Mercy University in Cedar Rapids in the Department of Natural and Applied Sciences. He is originally from Syria, and this hour I'm talking with contributors to the new collection, We the Interwoven, Volume 3, from the Iowa Writers' House. And my final guest today is Shalini Justy. She was born in India, but came to the United States with her family when she was only 6 months old. She grew up in Illinois and is now a junior at the University of Iowa, studying creative writing and secondary education. Shalini, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're pretty unusual in this very diverse group of people in the bicultural fellowship. I guess you're probably the youngest of the group. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm a senior, so I'm 21.
All right. Well, so tell me what drew you to participating in this workshop.
I remember a friend of mine told me about the Bicultural Iowa Writing Fellowship, and I was just really happy to know that there was a space like that for my writing, especially in juxtaposition to all the other writers in the creative writing program at Iowa. So I was just happy to contribute to an anthology that had writing that was similar to mine and didn't necessarily stand out.
You did come here to study creative writing, but I sense there that you don't find that to be necessarily a very welcoming space.
I have learned great things from the creative writing program at the University of Iowa. I have just often found that since I write about my family and my culture and my experience with both my family and my culture, that my writing is othered within classroom spaces because it's not writing that is similar to my peers. And it just feels like my writing is always going to be different because of the content.
in joining this bicultural fellowship, what did that feel like to not just be in a space where that kind of writing was not othered, but where you were given the space to share these stories that valued this otherness, I guess?
It felt validating to know that my writing was in some way valuable for the story, but not necessarily that the story was different from everyone else. So it just gave me a sense of validation that I think I, like, honestly just needed to understand that I can claim the label of being a writer or an author. It doesn't matter that my writing is different from other people.
Now, you grew up in Naperville, Illinois, and you don't remember living in India. You write a lot about how your parents' memories sort of have created this kaleidoscope idea of India in your mind. As you were growing up, how did you think about the fact that you were not just American, but Indian American?
It was really confusing because there's already sort of a gap in identity between my parents and I, and they have instilled in me a beautiful culture, a beautiful language, and traditions that I am very adamant on keeping. But outside of the, like, house, I am very much just like a normal, like, American college student. So it's like I live two different lives and they often don't intersect, and it's confusing and frustrating at times because I just want my life to feel like a conjoined timeline, but it's not. It feels like I'm performing on either end all the time.
Wow. Do you feel like you've had to choose what identity you should have?
I think I've made the choice that I don't want to choose and I will never choose. I've gotten in a lot of trouble in the past for thinking that I had to choose, and that's caused me a lot of pain because that means I'm leaving something behind. And both my identities as an Indian woman, but also someone who was raised in the United States and has those, like, environmental factors, are important parts to my personality, and I need both to be me. I can't choose.
When you started writing about your childhood and about some of the frustration that you have encountered in trying to find your identity and figure out who you are presenting to the world, you had to dredge up some pretty unpleasant memories as well. Tell me what that process felt like to you.
This is the first time I've shared my writing with my parents. So it was like, it felt like I was going to get in trouble because I'm essentially like sharing a part of my upbringing that isn't necessarily the most like nurturing. But it was important because I think my parents and like my family needed to know like the frustration I had with having this like barrier of communication and self-expression. And it did take just like explaining and having those really long conversations with my family for them to understand why writing was so important to me and why it's so closely tied to my identity.
How did they react?
Indian families tend to be very secretive. I don't think secretive is the right word. Private might be a better word. So it's kind of like I'm like releasing family secrets that aren't necessarily supposed to be spoken about. But at this point, they've accepted that much like I am growing into my culture and growing as a person, my writing will do the same thing. So while sometimes my writing may seem frustrating, angry, like, and embody the sense of being very confused, that's because at that time I was confused. I was angry, and it's represented in my writing.
You also write about how, particularly with your mother, she had dreams that she was not able to realize because of society's bounds, really, for her. And then here you are growing up in the United States, and you develop very different dreams from hers. The idea of being a writer, of studying English, this was not something that she would have considered. It's not something she would have wanted. And that hurt her, that you didn't want the same things that she wanted. And I think that that's something that perhaps a lot of first generation Americans experience with their parents, this sort of split. Tell me more about how you walked that journey.
I think there was a lot of me deciding or making the choice not to feel guilty about wanting something that was different from my parents. And for the first few years that I was just angry at the idea that I wanted to be an English major, I think a lot of that anger and confusion was surrounded by guilt, because I know that my mother loves me. I know that my mom has given up so much to ensure that I have the life that I do have. And here I am choosing to read and write essentially for a college degree. And it feels very like I'm taking advantage of the opportunities that they've been giving me. But that is also just a feeling of discomfort that I've been working through with my family in order to understand that it's okay for me to follow this path.
You are now a senior in college and you're student teaching right now, which I'm sure there are all kinds of things we can talk about student teaching in the midst of a pandemic. But student teaching at Southeast Junior High in Iowa City. You know, we know that Iowa is not the most diverse state, but Iowa City is one of the more diverse communities in Iowa. Do you feel like having gone through this process and really explored some of the things that you were feeling as you were becoming an adult, do you feel like that has given you something to bring to those students in your life?
I don't think my education from the University of Iowa has necessarily provided me with the background I need to teach a diverse range of students. I think because of the life that I've lived and because of the body that I'm in, I happen to know some things that other people of color also know, and I'm able to share those experiences with my students in a way that white educators can't necessarily share from their personal experience. And I am very thankful that the University of Iowa has at least taught me classroom management skills and how to effectively communicate with all my students, but especially my students that have been historically underserved within the American education system.
Now that you've really sat down and explored so many parts of your life, as you are preparing to graduate and start your career, what's next for you? What are your dreams right now?
Right now, I just want to get a job teaching English in a middle or high school level anywhere in the United States or internationally. That is the only goal I have.
I think that's an exciting goal, and I know that there's definitely a need for teachers, so I hope you can make that happen. Do you think there is more that you want to write about?
There is definitely a lot more that I want to write about. I think my writing is taking a form where I'm writing for my own understanding of self, and it's going to take a very long time for me to understand all the emotions and sort of identities that are compiled in me, and for me to fully encapsulate that within the story without necessarily negatively painting anyone in my life.
I think that's a challenge a lot of writers encounter. Well, it's exciting that you're a part of this collection, and I really appreciate you take the time to share your experience and your writing with us.
Thank you so much.
And best of luck to you. Shalini Justy is one of the contributors to We the Interwoven, Volume 3, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. She was born in India and is now a senior at the University of Iowa. She grew up in Naperville, Illinois. We the Interwoven Volume 3 has just been published, and there will be a virtual reading for all of the contributors, all 7 contributors, at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, virtually at least. That's coming up on Sunday, January 17th at 2 p.m. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, Matt Alvarez, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical assistance today from Julie Englander. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe.